From deep inside Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Chad Beater.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
And welcome to Defrag Tools. So, Andrew, you started a new gig. How's the new role going?
I jumped ship from support into DevLand. I now work for, used to be the Windows division, now the OS division.
Yeah.
And I'm in the Windows reliability team.
Nice.
Which is cryptic words for send to Microsoft.
Yeah.
So the all the telemetry and stuff you send up and crashes and stuff
comes
to my team.
Windows error reporting.
Yep. And online crash analysis as well. So I'm on the Windows error reporting side, which is the user side. We had Graham McIntyre on ages ago, and he's in my team, and he also used to work with us. And he does the OCA side, the kernel bug check side. And so, it's a good group of us who just watch the data come in. We debug the dump files, all the big ones, and make sure it's routed off to the right person, internal or external, and hope to stabilize the platform.
So, God forbid something bad happened on my computer and it says, do you want to send this Microsoft? What it's really saying is, do you want to send this to Andrew?
Yeah.
Which I would have done anyway.
He's the man.
So, every time I have a problem, I send it to you.
And I'm really impressed by the team. Obviously, I knew about it, but going inside of it, it's just, these guys are super talented.
Yeah.
And it's a great place to work.
Yeah, I know a few of them, and they are very, very smart guys.
Yeah. And the other thing that the team's responsible for is bang analyze. So, when we're in the debugging, we say do bang analyze minus V.
Cool.
That's what we code. That's what the team writes. And actually, the last 3 or 4 days, that's what I've been doing, is writing changes to Bang Analyze. So,
so any suggestions for improvements to Bang Analyze?
Nice.
Not me.
Awesome.
So, what was good that came with it, and the conversation we had before we went on air, is I got a new machine, and we're talking about how you can set up machines with SSDs and hard drives, and how the mix works.
Yeah.
And
if you haven't seen a defrag, I think it will go up this week. But I talked about I'm building a new machine at home too, so that's how we got started talking about that.
Yeah.
And I was asking you, I'm going to get 2 SSDs. Should I RAID 0 the SSDs for speed, or should I do something else?
I think the RAID 0, ignoring for speed reasons, which is obviously always a good reason
on
a gaming rig, just for simplicity, because RAID 0, what it does is inherently just put the two together and makes it a bigger disk, then you're going to end up with a nice big honking SSD farm, right?
Which is what I want.
And twice
as
fast.
That's nice, but...
And the thing I like about it, and this is something I had to tackle with my new machine, which I'll show in a sec, is I didn't have enough space on my SSD on my new machine to put program files there. So Visual Studio, mainly, I had to put it onto another hard drive, right? So then you're in this battle of the installers, whether you can or can't change program files folder and stuff like that. That's not, a great experience.
Or if you need to look for something, you go into program files like, it's the program files on the other drive.
Have to remember which one you installed.
I already have, the 86. I got 2 already, and now I got 4.
Yeah. And so if I had 2 SSDs, which my machine, new machine doesn't, but if I had 2 SSDs, I would definitely go the RAID 0 approach.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you get that nice big space and the speed. The only downside is twice the drives, twice the risk.
If one of them fails, you lose them both, basically. Well, not the hardware, but you lose the data.
But there's a balance here, right? I mean, I have a pretty strong backup regime. So to me, it's only about the data anyway.
Yeah, well, for me, I mean, anything that's important, if it's like a Word doc or anything that I'm working on, it's on another drive anyway. It's not on that computer's drive. It's on an external drive that's in
a dock. SkyDrive.
Yeah. So that's not a huge concern. I mean, I'd hate to lose a machine, but I could repave it if I had to.
Yeah, and as much as Gov said you can repave in 20 minutes, yeah, no. I can tell you, as a person who repaved the machine last week to my new machine, it takes about a day to actually get it the way
Maybe
you
if I was Gov, I could do it faster, but I'm not
you
Gov.
Have to reinstall your apps, and then
But I think he installs all the apps and then makes an image from that point.
Oh, I see.
Where I just get this OSCD and put the CD in, and away you go. So... the one of the things I do is a thing called junction points. And what the problem I have on my machine, the new one, is the C drive is an SSD, but it's only 128 gig.
Yikes.
And it's already, you can see, it's only got 15 gig free. So I like everything to be in CMySIM and CMySource and all that type of stuff. I like C drive to be the place where I look for things, but I can't afford the space. And there's a couple of ways you could do this. I've got these big, 1 terabyte hard drives, spinning platter drives, what I could do is, instead of having as a drive letter, what I could do is actually make it a mount point, and you could say, I want that to be C drive, as D drive, as a folder on C, and then you could go C colon D drive, and it would move into that file. It works quite well. It does cause some programs some issues, though. Like, if Explorer thinks you're moving from C colon my to C colon D drive, well, it thinks it's one drive, and it thinks the move's going to be
it's
like that.
Do a move, right.
But it doesn't, because it has to do a copy.
Yeah.
And so there's a couple of programs out there that just don't get the timing right. They expect the wrong timing effect and then present a UI the wrong way, and so you get UI hangs and stuff like that. So just be aware
interesting.
Of that. The other way I do it, and this is the way I prefer to do it, because that means I have to put the entire drive into a particular folder, which kind of gets a bit messy.
Yeah.
I like targeted movement. And so at the moment, I would like a my folder in the root of C. And so what you can do is you can make like equivalent of a shortcut through the mklink command. It has to be an elevated command prompt. And in this case, what I want to do is make a directory that points to another disk. Alright, and so what I'm going to do is make a link, a directory, and I'm going to call it my, and in this case, the directory where I've got the actual real data, which is, you know, this is my symbol cache internal, and it's, you know, 200 or 300 gigabytes, never going to fit on the SSD, is on E drive. And now it's made a link, and you can see right here, you get the symbolic link thing, and it tells you where it is. I happen to also have one for my source code, which is what this other one is. So my D is my source code drive, and my E is my symbol drive. And so now, if I start this folder, and get rid of all this stuff up here, you'll see that there's now a my folder, and it just goes across the other
So it's like a folder, it's just a shortcut, goes to the other spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once again, it does have the UI issue, right? So some things may assume that a move will do it. There is actually lots of symbolic links on the hard drive. This is how user and documents and settings and all these do the same thing.
Yeah, the OS uses this functionality internally quite a bit.
And I love this. I use this all the time.
So I think I might do this because one of the other things that I wanted to do was get 32 gig of RAM and then just partition off a section of it for a RAM drive. And I would use that for, like, you know, swap file or something in Photoshop or other things I want really high speed, because it's really high speed when you do a RAM drive. But I'd like to do this too, so I have access to it off my C.
Yeah.
So that might be a good option.
I'm a fan of C drive based everything.
Yeah.
Right. The other thing you can do is, like under videos and stuff, you could put a link in there as well. With videos and music, you can use libraries. You know, the better for that. But if you want to go the tricky way, you could put a link into your videos.
Yeah. Folder. And again, libraries is kind of the same thing. It's symbolic link off to another area.
Yeah, libraries is more of like a logical thing that sort of Explorer knows about, and the search engine to go know where to look for things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had a question from a viewer.
Where are we? Here we go. Here, two questions, actually. So the first question from Barry, I don't know who his last name was, but Barry, was about these two events he saw on someone's machine, where he's an IT administrator type guy. that's all the information he gave us, but we kind of guessed what was going on. So in Windows 8 and above, Windows Error Reporting and Process Lifetime Management now monitors for both crashes and hangs, right? And so particularly when a store application is frozen and doesn't respond for whatever it is, 5-10 seconds, it will go, that's not good, and actually takes a dump of you in the background.
And so the problem that he was having, though, was that Explorer was hanging?
Yeah.
Was that it? And then it would just restart?
I think the symptoms he would see was just there was these things in the event log saying that the shell stopped.
So what we think is happening is this hang subsystem in Windows 8 is saying Explorer's hung. Now, Explorer is a monitored application in Windows 8 because it controls the start bar and menu and start screen, and it needs to be so resilient, right? We can't afford to be jammed, particularly for a tablet where there's no keyboard and stuff. We need to monitor it. And so in this case, Explorer hung, and it was bad enough that it was reported. And then because of the hang state, WinLogon went So because of its hang state, PLM or Windows reporting, one of those guys killed Explorer knowing it was bad. WinLogon noticed that, and then WinLogon remade Explorer for you. So what he did is he installed procdump and did the minus I to make the AE debug thing. Now, fortunately, application termination due to hangs rather than a crash doesn't invoke AE debug, right? And this is something actually my team is responsible for and something I've brought up already. And so it's kind of hard to hook into this system and get some data. I have a theory, and I haven't tested it yet, but this is the theory I have, is when we get a hang, that telemetry is sent to Microsoft, right? Both for hangs and crashes, which means the Windows Error Reporting subsystem may actually be able to do this. And so when Windows Error Reporting takes a dump file, it usually only takes this report, and it doesn't usually have a dump, and it only has some basic information. Or if it does have a dump, it's called a triage dump, which is a tiny little useless thing. So what you can set in policy is, I actually want physical dump files, right? And you can put them into a folder, and type is complete, and how many, I'll keep up to 10 of them, and this is a special set of flags of what type of things you want to include and not include in the dump file. There's a whole lot of MSDN pages on this, and we'll put them in the show notes. But my theory is that at a hang scenario, this will actually take...
Still get invoked.
Yeah. Now, in fact, this is actually exactly the same as procdump. So this will run regardless of whether there is or isn't an AE debug key for crashes. Mm. And so if you didn't want to use procdump and want to just do it exactly the same thing through policy, because this is actually setable by group policy, you could actually do it this way and achieve the same goal. So what we're suggesting is go put this key on and see if it picks up any dump files. At worst, it won't. At best, it will. And then go from there.
And that will work on ARM as well, this local dumps, which is a good thing because procdump doesn't have an ARM version.
Yeah, or Visual Studio or Windows Debugger, all those things which you would normally install as an AE debugger. So it's a good way for an ARM crash. And then the second one's a little bit more harder to work out. So a tablet is unusable twice a day. I don't know exactly what the user has seen. This is for he's seen hearing this secondhand. I've run benchmarks and checked the event logs, but found nothing. I also checked that it wasn't antivirus, and I suspect it is an application or wireless issue. I don't have other users complaining. We also replaced the tablet. So this really does rule out a lot of things.
Yeah.
Right.
Rules out physical hardware.
Right.
But it doesn't rule out driver issues. Right. So, I mean, no doubt the tablet he got back was another one of the same brand, the same thing out of the same farm.
Probably with the same image on it, with the same set of drivers.
Yeah. So because it's saying it's a hang rather than anything else, I'm guessing this is more application level than more OS. Sure, it could be this one particular area of this one particular office, this one particular area, whatever it is having wireless issues, and maybe there's some dark spot in the wireless there or something, or some collision issues. This is a hard one to track.
Yeah, there's a lot of detail we don't know. Like, what exactly does that mean? When someone says to me, well, my computer's hanging, that can mean so many things, right? Is it just an application that's hung? Is it maybe just, sort of unresponsive, like you can still move the mouse, but you click things and there's some level of hang underneath there? Or is it like physically hung?
Or is it just slow?
Mouse, or is it slow? There's a lot of people, when somebody says, oh, my computer's hung, it could mean a lot of different things. So you really need a lot of detail to know where to look.
And you could be really invasive here. You go, all right, let's start network monitoring, get a network trace and see how many network packets are dropped. And let's start Windows Performance Toolkit and run a circuit buffer and chew up a half a gig of RAM, recording everything out of the sun. You can go a bit less than that, which he said he's done, and go more the event log approach and the performance monitor approach. But without real data, it's hard to tell. The problem with performance monitor is it's not really good at telling you a specific application's issue. So if it's a big endemic issue, fine, right? You'll see disk saturated or CPU saturated or the opposite or something hanging. But it doesn't really tell you, well, this one page of application's having issues because it's trying to download this web service call that's taking a long time. You just won't get that information out of performance monitor. Sure, if the application is fantastic and has actually written performance counters that tell you, maybe. right? But it's like, not really.
If you really want to go invasive, you could set up for a crash on control scroll lock, and when you get to that hang point, try to hit the control scroll lock twice, blue screen the box, look at the memory dump. But then, you know, you've just basically rebooted your machine, too.
Yeah.
So that's pretty invasive.
So
there's
balance.
A lot of different ways you can go here. But I think you'd want to start with the less invasive approaches first and then work your way up.
So we're working with Barry. We'll see where we go with this. As we're saying, it's quite nebulous right now.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you get the same type of issue with on Defrag Show, right? You get sessions that are...
Yeah, and sometimes there's just not enough information like this, and you need to just keep going back and forth.
So, what else do we have? And we have a crash. So I had a crash on my machine. I thought, let's just do an obvious crash. So one of the things that, actually I had two crashes that I wanted to show you. So we keep on going into these really deep analysis things and saying, you know, X, Y, Z and Fubi Wopsit and whatever it is. But sometimes some of this analysis can be quite simple, right? And so this was a crash in SVC host. It's a host at the process that holds NT services. And when we do an ECXR to get to the crash context, you get this line of code. And what I was going to show you is just some basic troubleshooting verification that you can do. So I can say, look, this module right here is the problem, right?
U-P-K-B.
But I want to make sure that he kind of is responsible for his own, for the final issue. Yeah, I don't want him to be the effect rather than the cause, right? And so what's happened here is we're trying to read from register RCX and then plus 8. And so that regularly means that you have a structure and you're trying to read a member of the structure, maybe, you know, pointed to this or a foo or whatever, that's 8 bytes into the structure. And whenever you see a 0s, blah, 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 and 8, that's what this represents, 0 plus 8, right? And you can see that up here, the register is also 0, 0, 0. So what we want to know is, why is RCX 0? In other words, why is RCX a null pointer, right?
We would expect in this case RCX should point to some valid memory address that's the location of some structure or that this program is using.
Yeah. And so what we can do is we'll unassemble backwards from the current instruction pointer, the RIP, this register here.
UB is often overlooked. I use it all the time, though.
Yeah.
Unassemble backwards.
And you'll notice that the line of code we were on wasn't there because we went backwards. So I tend to do UB and then follow it up with a U, which goes forward.
Yep.
And so this is the line that crashed, and this is what led up to it. So what's important here is to find out the origin of RCX, and I'll spoil the story here. We're not going to get the root cause, but we'll see why, right? So I can say that this guy is still at fault, but I can't tell you why, right? So what we want to know is why RCX is zero. So what we do is we walk backwards. Well, RCX isn't used here, isn't used here, isn't used here, isn't used here, here, but it is used here.
Right.
Right, so RCX actually came from RAX,
right?
Which probably is another structure with an offset 20 into it to some pointer. So a pointer to a pointer to our final data. So we want to go, well, what's the current value of RAX? Well, RAX at this point came from here, which came from the stack.
So this was passed into this function by the previous caller.
Yep. And so the problem is, at the moment, if we look downwards, we had RAX, but then we reused it for some other reason, right? So RAX is no good. And then RAX was used to set something on the stack, and along we go. So the best thing we can do is try to pull this out. Now, between where we are now and where we were back on RSP, the important thing to do is to make sure there's no operation in here that can move the stack pointer. Right, and that's a call, a push, and a pop are the three main ones. And so,
or something just acting directly on RSP.
Direct. Yeah. Which are pretty rare. You don't get them too much.
Pretty well, you see it in function prologs where we'll subtract something from RSP.
Yeah. And so we look at that register, it's got a good value. What we want to do is read the pointer that's 70 offset from that. And so what we do, we're going to dump a pointer. We put an at sign on the front of it to avoid symbol lookup. And then that, and we want to look at, read the pointer that it read. Now, why am I saying pointer? Well, RAX is a 64-bit. If it's had EAX, it'd be 32-bit. If it had other numbers, then it'll be different bitness. But because it's got the R on the front, I know it's a 64-bit operation, which is why I'm saying just dump it as a pointer, because P, the native pointer size of this thing is 64-bit. I could have actually done dump Q, which is a quad word, which is the same thing. L1 says just dump one of them. So here's our next number. Then it is RAX plus 20, it turns into RCX. So let's dump the pointer of that, plus 20, L1. And then here's our number. Now this is the weird thing. This actually has a number that's decent.
Yeah, it looks like a valid memory address.
Yeah. So I got this one, oh, this is gonna be easy, blah, blah, blah. And it doesn't make sense. So something in here has actually screwed up this stack pointer, and you can't do this math at this moment. Now, we're looking at memory at the time of the dump, not the time of the operation. Another thread could have easily had the same structure and actually put the good value onto it, right? And so this guy got to the null pointer before the other guy got in and actually wrote it.
So you suspect this is a race condition?
Yes, I suspect it's a race condition. And because it's so involved in itself and it's not using other people's code, there's no call to some other function, mm-hmm. I suspect it's its own fault.
So most likely the developer of this, whatever it is, has two threads operating on the same kind of piece of memory, and one of them went and read something before the other thread had populated it.
Yeah.
And that's why we got the zero out of it.
Even though the value is good now, it wasn't in the past. So, man, the last thing to do is LNVM, list modules verbosely on a mask, and this guy is this guy, and throwing biometric units under the bus. They have an issue, but it's a fingerprint reader. Mm. Well, my other laptop has a fingerprint reader on it, and it has obviously the driver loaded for it. I've never used a fingerprint reader in my life.
Yeah.
Right? I just don't use it. And so the simple answer for this guy is instead of trying to find an updated driver or whatever module, just install it.
Yeah.
So, and that's a very simple debug of assembler. And the other one I was going to show you is even faster. This was the same machine.
So just throwing the fingerprint readers under the bus, I had a problem at home where my wife's computer wouldn't use sysinternals auto login and end up being fingerprint reader. Huh? So,
because they've changed authentication method or something like that.
So,
I don't know if I've had, you know, remember the old Microsoft one with the big.
Yeah.
Thing? I gave that to my.
I have one.
I gave that to my in-laws years ago. I'm talking like 5-10 years ago, and to log into the VC, and each person just put their finger on the machine to log in, mm-hmm. so I didn't have to get what's my password and all that stuff, and they just put their finger on it. And the great thing about it is you can record more than one finger per user.
Yeah.
And so what I did was, that's the dad, that's the mom, that's the sister, that's the other sister. And I just went through my fingers. And so if I had to log in with their accounts to fix something, I just pressed the right finger.
Nice.
And then and the middle login was my thumb.
Nice.
I won't be administrator.
So you put your own little back door when you had to help them. So that's kind of clever.
It worked really well.
Yeah.
And the slight thing I don't like about those old fingerprint readers, and I think it's fixed these days, is you couldn't use it to do a domain log on. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of locked out through policy.
Yeah. Mm.
But I think we're now past that point. I think maybe Windows 8 and above will let you do it because we've got a lot more trust on that. Mm. So this is another one I had. This is WMI. This is one of the WMI worker processes that kicks in. And just doing ECXR, you can see straight away that it's actually told you what it is.
Unloaded.
So.
Interesting. So we've jumped into some piece of code that we think should belong to this DLL, but it's not loaded.
Yep. And we do a K, you get very, very little. Why do you get very little? Well, we have no DLL to read the assembler from to work out what's going on. What causes this? Well, actually, this proved that it's unloaded in the first place. So the instruction pointer is right here. 5BD9 something, 5BD9, so LM's the command. So at the top you get all the loaded modules, and down the bottom you get all the unloaded modules. And then what we're looking for is 5DB9. And so this module goes between 5DB8 up to 5DBA. So 5DB9 is in that range. And so this guy was loaded in that memory address. You'll notice that I think he turns up multiple times. I think he does get loaded and unloaded a couple of times. So how does this happen, right? Well, it's all about reference counting. And so a lot of COM DLLs go, do I have any objects left factoried out, right? And you'll have a call, and actually what we can do using the debug extension on the SkyDrive, we can find all the stacks that actually have unloaded DLLs in them at the moment, and there's actually a fair few. This is at the top of the stack, which is bad, that's bad. And this actually gives you a clue of why it took a while to crash. You're in code, and then that code said, I want to wait on something, right? And so you go into Microsoft code. And so when you went in, it was loaded, but when you come out of the wait and return from the wait for multiple objects call, you return into unloaded memory. And that's what causes the crash. So in this, at the moment, this thread and this thread have both returned and are crashing. That one's waiting, that one's waiting. These are time bombs waiting to happen. And so what's happened is one of these threads has returned, dereferenced a counter, brought it down to zero, unloaded the DLL, and everybody else who thought they had a counter on the object justifying the DLL to exist has been destroyed. So
this is sort of like the wheels coming off your car while you're on the freeway. And somebody has gone and told the mechanic, oh, let's take those wheels off. But you have like four threads still running that code. And so the minute they return from whatever they're doing, they're just hosed.
They're in a brick wall.
Yeah.
So one of those things is it's as simple as saying, who is this module? Unfortunately, because it's unloaded, you can't LNVM it because there's nothing to look up. So
you have to go look on your computer, look at the properties of that file.
Yep. And well, I did a Bing and System Center, so putting them under the bus.
So they have some kind of
Microsoft has bugs too.
Reference count bug in there.
Yeah.
It happens.
It does.
We're all human, right?
Nice. Well, glad you fixed that.
Yeah.
That's the show for this week. If you have questions, write us at defragshow@microsoft.com, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Have a good week.
Thank you.